Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Believe it or not, it's 20 years since James Blunt launched his mega-selling album, Back to Bedlam, with massive hits, You're Beautiful and Goodbye, My Lover, James Blunt. Good morning to you.
Hey, how are you doing?
You are re-releasing the album, you're going on tour as well and coming to Ireland. Why do you so detest the human race, James Blunt, that you would inflict it all upon us again?
Well, you know, I think you guys seem to enjoy it a little bit too much this summer. and maybe we did as a band. We played both in Dublin and in Limerick. And for the whole year that we've been on tour, the whole world that we have covered, we just had such fun in both Dublin and Limerick. I mean, the audience sang like I've never heard before. And maybe they're just trying to drown me out. But the result has been that we're coming back in, Mark.
I have seen the video footage, and there's lots of ole oles in Limerick in particular. So much to your annoyance, you enjoy a vast number of fans, especially in Ireland.
No, they've been very, very kind to me. And actually, my very first ever tour was touring around Ireland.
Yeah.
Me and my keyboard player in the back of an ex-girlfriend's Mini. We stuck a guitar and a little keyboard in there, a wireless keyboard. And we drove round Ireland in tiny little venues and had the most amazing time.
Do you remember some of the venues and places you saw on that Mini tour?
I absolutely can't remember a single name, but I remember a ton of different bars and pubs that we went to after the event. And many stories that I probably can't tell you.
You've had a good time over the years in Ireland.
It's been absolutely brilliant.
7 studio albums, multiple tours. What have you learned about the world, James Blunt?
Well, I mean, I suppose the music business is a fickle and a shallow one. It's not even about music. It's not about what's hip and what's cool and of the moment. I know that it's very tough for young people getting into the music business now. And so I feel very lucky to be here after 20 years, still going, still with a record deal, because nowadays people are given, you know, a record deal for one song, whereas I signed for 5 albums and have managed to extend that. So I feel very lucky. And I feel I travel the world and I sing in English, but I sing to people who speak any number of languages with any color of skin or race or religion. And yet they come, stand shoulder to shoulder and feel the same human emotion that I'm singing about. And so while our politicians try and divide us, I feel very much that all humans, we share the same human emotion, and I think we're much more alike than our politicians or our flag wavers would necessarily tell us.
Yes, we didn't realise 20 years ago when Back to Bedlam was released how the world would change, because nowadays, you know, as you're saying, there's division in politics. People are usually hate figures for terrible sex scandals, being racist, scamming postmasters, as is in the case in Britain and so on. But back in 2004, all you had to do was release a best-selling song and an album. And that did it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was a strange time. Even when I put it out, we had 9/11 attacks, Afghanistan, Iraq as well, and so lots of people said my album came out at a time of a bit of turmoil, and actually was something that was in some way unifying or bonding to listen to. Who knows if I was just told that, but it seemed like it was a gentler sound.
But we flock towards those kind of escapisms and celebrate them now, but not in 2004. But when I look at the list of people who kind of lashed your music, they did it as a kind of a brand for their own coolness, or as they saw it, because they wanted to, I don't know, loudly brand themselves as the opposite to how they saw you, unforgivably unmanly, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I just stepped out of the army, so I wasn't too worried about being called unmanly. but I think musicians, probably, we all fall into the trap when we're in interviews trying to sell our music. When a journalist throws us a line saying, you know, who don't you like in the music business? We fall for the trap of giving them an answer when we really don't need to. And so some people did that. And I, you know, if you're selling a lot, as I was lucky enough to be doing, then you're going to be an easy target.
And many have been there before, haven't they? I think of Christa Berg in the 80s, even after Back to Bedlam, you know, Ed Sheeran was also in the firing line. Coldplay has been.
Yeah, I mean, Coldplay get it.
Gary Barlow. You
know, I think there are any number of people you can mention. But, you know, as I say, I'm very, one can also start getting bogged down in the negativity. But I'm playing in venues that are, you know, I'm playing in 10,000, 20,000 capacity venues. And so to pull up one or two people who've said something nasty about it seems to be disingenuous when there are thousands coming in. And I think perspective is probably an important thing as a musician, to not get yourself bogged down in one or two negativities.
Well, perspective as a public figure as well, because as you did say, you were a soldier and that brought you to actual combat zones. And obviously, I presume that would have helped you to look at all this kind of attack as childish stuff, since you were in Kosovo serving along your colleagues and you saw what life and death and what division can do in the world.
Yeah, very much. I don't really see myself as in the music industry. I see myself as a touring musician, and as a band and a crew, we travel the world very much in a similar way as we did when I was in the army. You know, with everyone, as we're reliant on each other as a team. Everyone is a professional doing what they do, and they look after me incredibly well with their expertise and their guidance and their advice. And we go to perhaps nice, safer places than I did in the army, and perhaps nicer places such as Dublin. So I see the similarities, but the music industry is about selling image, and dealing with the fickle things of, as I say, what's hip and what's cool, and those aren't necessarily what's real. So I didn't find myself feeling that much at home in the actual industry.
That's interesting that you say that. Also, I think your fans, and even people who wouldn't call themselves your fans, love that unique way you have of dealing with what you say, to turn that negativity into a positive, which is owning the jokes that have come your way, self-deprecating, joking at your own expense. When did that kind of jocular James Blunt show his face in the world?
You have to do that in the army. You can't. We're a bunch of soldiers together. You're gonna make mistakes. You're gonna fall down. You have to pick yourself up, and you have to be able to laugh.
The camaraderie is about slagging each other off.
Yeah, basically.
Did you get it in the army?
Yeah, very much. I mean, all of us do. To see yourself, to get through some of the things that we did, the down times, but the traumatic times as well. You know, dark humor and the ability to laugh in the darkest of places is pretty important.
Yeah, sounds pretty important. And as part of the strategy for the anniversary, you've offered to change your name.
Yeah, well, that was very silly of me. But I just said that if the album gets to number one, I would change my name to whatever the public chose. And I misjudged the public.
The reaction has been quite strong.
Would not be a good name.
What is currently one of the front runners that you might have to leave?
I mean, it's so obvious. I'm so sad about it. It's like Blunty McBluntface.
Yeah, that's kind of a boring one, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, my children were rather excited by Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Pop Star Four Chord Song Machine.
One Hit Wonder, I think, is another one.
No, Jimmy Spliff seems to be high. I might stick with that. If that won, I would probably keep that.
So what is the criteria? Has to go to number one in the British charts, I presume.
I mean, you know what? If it did it in Ireland, I'd do the same.
Would it? Okay, you're confirming, because, you know, it might be a little bit easier to go to number one in Ireland.
The problem people have is that, you know, okay, great, they get the knowledge and the pleasure that they contribute to me changing my name. The problem is they'd have to go out and buy the album. And the shame of that probably might just be the tipping point where it doesn't work out. So I feel pretty safe. I'm praying for number two. Number two in the charts is what I'm hoping for.
It's a good approach. Like you say, you've turned the negativity into something that's a lot of fun. Reading this week in the New York Times, or you're chatting to them, you own a pub in Chelsea in London. People know that. It's called The Fox and the Pheasant. Tell us how you make sure everyone leaves at closing time.
Yeah, well, we have strict licensing law at The Fox and Pheasant, which specifically no music by James Blunt. That's what the council actually said. I think the neighbours demanded that when I bought the pub, apart from at 5 to midnight, which is closing time, I am then allowed to play You're Beautiful to help clear the pub out.
And it works. It works.
It's a very efficient
way. It wouldn't work here, just so you know. Nothing works here. Speaking of people who have badly wronged you, did Robbie Williams steal your drummer?
I have to say, Rob and I are close friends. And the moment that article came out, which obviously I'm joking about, I did fire it through him. He and I speak and he just paid more for my drummer. He was he's my drummer.
Okay.
But my drummer is a whore to Robbie Williams, who paid him more.
Oh, you're just mean. You didn't pay the drummer enough. I mean, that's another way of looking at it.
I'm paying good money. But no, Robbie's just more flash and more flush.
Yeah, but the drummer still, he does he work for both of you? Does he go over and back? Is there sort of a...
Does, yeah, we trade drummers.
Is it drumming throuple happening?
Yes, exactly that. But then sometimes Robbie pulls rank and I just have to watch.
Okay, that's a kind of a burgeoning relationship there that could go horribly wrong. Another thing you do, you act up your poshness. Now, I don't mean this as a mean thing. I'm just coming from an Irish perspective where poshness has a different... British poshness in particular is a different perspective for us. Because unlike 99% of general poshness, yours is not put on at all. This is, you're OG posh.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just can't hide it. And so, of course, going into the music business, I'd probably do better to drop it and put on a different accent, but I'm not so good at accents.
You would have done it by now.
Maybe put on a Spanish accent, but it just wouldn't be very believable.
Okay.
And so I'm just stuck with it. I blame my parents. It's their fault.
It definitely is. And their parents as well.
Fortunately, I don't sing with a totally posh accent.
No, you don't. And that is the curious thing about singers who can't sometimes change their speaking voice. But magically, you're all able to change your voices when you sing.
Yeah. I mean, thank God for that.
It has worked, says you. Very posh. You married posh. It's a wonder you've any fans in Ireland at all, because I can tell you all Irish poshness is entirely put on. So just so you're aware.
I don't know. I couldn't comment. But the Irish are just, hopefully don't judge someone on their background when it's just, about a song. And the Irish, you have music in your blood, and that if someone's singing from the heart, that's what people gravitate towards. And I suppose also, like we talked about with the music business being fraudulent in the way it's trying to sell sometimes, I'm just trying to, I sing things that are real to me, real experiences, real life emotion without any pretense. And, I stand on a stage, effectively remove my clothing and say, this is all I got to offer. And I think the Irish, they understand that takes a certain courage to do, which they understand because lots of the Irish do that as well.
You know how to sell a show. You effectively remove all your most of your clothing on stage.
It's not impressive, but it's worth a look.
There are two Irish dates to the tour. You played Dublin already in summer. You mentioned Dublin and Limerick as well, but you're coming to Belfast as well on this tour.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been a long time since I've been to Belfast. It was, again, an amazing experience for me. That was very, very early days for me.
Yeah.
And I had a blast. So I have to own up. I did actually say at that concert, it's great to be here in Dublin when I was in Belfast. And my keyboard player was screaming at me, Blue Murder. And ever since then, my tour manager has written at the top of the set list which city I'm in, just because of the cock up of when okay. I was last in Belfast. And I'm hoping I'm still allowed there this time. I'm coming with a cap, grovelling away, saying I promise I won't get it wrong again.
Well, the fans are in for a treat, and 20 years on, you're still really, really proud of all the songs on Back to Bedlam.
Yeah, I mean, what a treat to still be here. To still be touring, to be invited to come back and play. I mean, I really do pinch myself thinking I'm very, very lucky in it. And, I'm singing songs, as I say, on this Back to Bedlam anniversary tour that people know, whether they like them or not, they were probably forced to listen to them by their parents on long car journeys. So it's been drilled into them. So, come along and take a walk down memory lane.
Well, sometimes songs are played so often that we put them away for long enough, and now it's a kind of a treat and we get to look at them with our older eyes. But listen, enjoy everything that you do, James Lunt. The remastered 20th anniversary release of Back to Bedlam is out on Friday. James, you're playing Belfast in February and Dublin's Three Arena Point Theatre in March. Obviously, they think it takes a long time.
It's such a treat to come back. As one of my very, very first tours was in a mini, driving around the whole of Ireland with my keyboard player and me, and a guitar and a Wurlitzer keyboard, and we had an absolute blast. So to be doing this again, but in a tour bus with a larger venue.
You're flying between them now. No minis to be seen. And that's no. Sweet revenge. James Blunt, it was so good chatting to you. Thank you so much.
Such a pleasure. See you there.
Bye-bye.